On September 11, 2001, between 7:55 and 8:42 in the morning, the four planes took off from East Coast airports. Divided among them were 19 hijackers. There were 15 Saudi Arabians, 2 Emiratis, 1 Lebanese, and leading them all, 1 Egyptian, Mohammed Atta. American Airlines Flight 11 struck the north face of the North Tower, WTC-1, at 8:46 a.m., traveling 470 miles per hour and hitting the 94th through the 98th floors. The Boeing 767-200, which took off from Boston, was carrying 92 people and some 10,000 gallons of jet fuel. United Airlines Flight 175 struck the south face of the South Tower, WTC-2, at 9:02 a.m., going 586 miles per hour, well beyond the limit it was designed for at that altitude. So fast that had the plane not hit the building, it might have broken up. The impact came between the 78th and 84th floors. The aircraft, also a Boeing 767-200, flying out of Boston, had 65 people and about 10,000 gallons of jet fuel aboard. The energy stored in the jet fuel from the two planes was the equivalent of 240 tons of dynamite. To put that in perspective, the United States military possesses tactical nuclear weapons, artillery shells, that can be calibrated to deliver this explosive yield, roughly a quarter of a kiloton. Of course, the attacks did not lead to radioactive fallout, but the energy release was nonetheless extraordinary, off the charts of comparison with all other terrorist attacks. The bomb that was used to destroy Khobar Towers, the U.S. military housing complex attacked in 1996, is believed by law enforcement officials to be perhaps the biggest ever. Its yield was the equivalent of 2.5 tons of TNT, roughly 1/100th as powerful as the two planes. The airplanes did not explode like bombs. A fraction of a second after each one hit, a fireball erupted and expanded for 2 seconds, consuming some of the jet fuel. The rest of the burning fuel swept across the floors of the building, igniting intense fires that engulfed the office furnishings. Temperatures reached between 1,700 and 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Reports said the heat produced was estimated to be comparable to that produced by a large nuclear generating station. In the northeast corner of WTC-2, where the hurtling plane had shoveled office equipment as it swept through the building, molten metal streamed down the side of the building. On about the 80th floor of the South Tower, in the corner where the molten metal ran down the side, there was a partial collapse. The weight of the falling floor caused the one below to give way, and then the one below that. The building came down in 10 seconds. The impact of the 500,000-ton structure's fall registered on seismographs as 2.1 on the Richter scale and was felt by instruments more than 250 miles away. At 9:40, American Airlines Flight 77 hit the west side of the Pentagon. The Boeing 757 with 65 people aboard had departed from nearby Dulles Airport and started out on its route to Los Angeles before turning around and returning toward Washington. The plane blasted a hole 5 stories high and 200 feet wide, killing 189 people. At 10:10 a.m., the fourth plane, United Airlines Flight 93, crashed in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. The 757, carrying 45 people, had been scheduled for an 8 a.m. takeoff from Newark Airport. But a 40-minute delay put the hijackers behind schedule, and passengers learned of the attacks on the World Trade Center through cell phone conversations. In the ensuing struggle between the passengers and hijackers, the plane went down, killing everyone aboard. The hijackers' target was reportedly the White House. The North Tower began to collapse at 10:28, much as the South Tower had. It had survived 102 minutes after the plane's impact. About 99% of those who were below the floors hit by the aircraft were safely evacuated. Only a handful from above the impact zone in the South Tower survived. The heroism of the firemen, police, building staff, and ordinary citizens on September 11th has justifiably been recounted by every newspaper and by every radio and television broadcaster in the country. 2,823 people are believed to have died in the World Trade Center. No one knows how many were evacuated from the buildings that day, but if one reckons that the towers typically had 40,000 or more people working inside during the day, not counting visitors, then the number of lives saved was extraordinary. It was possible to save them because the buildings themselves held up for as long as they did, longer than most structures would have. The construction of the towers turned out to be heroic in its own way. Almost immediately after the attacks, the site where the World Trade Center had stood became known as Ground Zero. Curiously, it went unnoted that throughout the Cold War, Ground Zero was widely considered to be the Pentagon, the most likely target for a Soviet missile in a nuclear exchange. A cafe in the Pentagon courtyard was even named Ground Zero. Of course, the Soviets were deterred. The terrorists of Al-Qaeda were not. In picking targets, those who planned the attacks took on the greatest symbols of American military, political, and economic power. Yet by concentrating their weaponry, our planes, on the World Trade Center, they moved the bullseye of the nation from the headquarters of the U.S. Armed Forces to icons of economic and, more important, civilian life. Why did the terrorists pick the World Trade Center as their foremost target? The simplest reason is much like the classic one given for the toppling of the Tower of Babel. The Twin Towers and the civilization they represent are an unforgivable challenge to the sovereignty of heaven. Unlike the God of the Old Testament, however, Al-Qaeda considered rectifying the moral order a human task.